if you want help with. I would like to come in and read the Word of God. Now look, if you are on your way to heaven, and I am on the way to hell, what is this to you? Leave me alone!
I'm going to tell you that up next is another Gene Shepherd, Gene Shepherd actual program from January of 1964, one that apparently we have never before rebroadcast over WBAI. It's about football formations and the myth of utopia. Some classic Shep. We'll let Ella finish out, and we will jump to Gene Shepherd to wrap up this edition of the Dustbin of History here on WBAI New York. Thanks for tuning in. Maybe we'll be broadcasting over the air next week. We'll see.
So I turn in every night after I leave this rotten outfit. You just don't know who's got rank around here. How do you think I get away with this stuff? Gotta try it living on a station break, smart guy. I'll fix your wagon. Guess I got about 9 other things I could have said I would have fixed. Don't think for a minute I don't know how to use it. I am not the oldest in grade T5. For nothing, I learned a lot of things. Test. This crummy mic. Hello. Is it working? Hello. That's right on there. Hello. Hello. Testing. Hello. Hello. 1, 2, 3. Hello.
Good evening, friends. It's certainly a pleasure to see you tonight. And it's great to see you tonight. We're just radiating good cheer and humor and good fellowship and friendliness and love. By the way, for those of you who haven't had any love over the weekend, you've come to the right spot on the dial. As we often say here at WOR, this is the station for pure love. We spell it, if you'd like to have further information on that, and perhaps maybe a few little handy hints and kinks on how you, too, can latch on to the mainstream, the mother lode of love, just send your name and address to LUV, Love, WOR, in care of Hot Dog, apartment 7. And we'll sure that... Oh, by the way, you have to be over 21. We have to tell you that because there's some very interesting diagrams and things that... Well, we've just got to protect our listeners. Speaking of protecting our listeners, I don't know whether you saw this. I'll tell you, you cannot, I insist, you cannot, it would be impossible for anyone to truly record the gallimaufry, the time, the gigantic circus that we are living through. You just can't, it must have been always this way, though, Tony. I'm sure that an Egyptian, if you were to be able to bring back a mummy, you know, somewhere they bring him back, and, you know, they see Victor Mature, they show him the movie of the Egyptian, how is it like that? They call him in as a technical consultant on a movie about Egypt. You know, he says, you guys would never understand. I just can't. Let me tell you, the Pharaoh one day, and Noah, you know, you just can't understand life unless you're looking at it and seeing it. Now, like here the other day, how can you explain this to, say, somebody living in, just pick a country, I don't care, France, doesn't make any difference, Thailand, just name it. I'm sitting there on my thing watching a football game. See, I'm sitting there, and it's, you know, it's a football game, a terrible football game. They're hitting and rolling around, just awful football game. You know, there are few things sadder, nor more strained, nor hysterical than the sound of a TV announcer trying to pretend that it's a very good football game, and the score is 30-6. In the midpoint of the second quarter. Well, you know, they say, this game isn't exactly, it sure doesn't show on the scoreboard, you know. The Whoopieville team there made over three, they almost made two first downs. If they hadn't, it's going on like that, and I'm sitting there, and my ears are humming, and it's buzzing, and I'm watching this football game, which is all right. It's kind of a numbing thing, and the football game goes over, and then the real show starts, you know, the stuff that is really significant about our time. And that's the halftime ceremonies. I remember, do you remember the halftime ceremonies here that I reported on last year that had to do with the Confederacy? Don't you remember that? It showed the band marched out last year. I reported this on the air. Last year, the two big ships came marching out. The band made two ships, you know, the Merrimack and the Monitor. Well, the other side won that time. And, yeah, they did it right, and they blew up cannons, waved Confederate flags, and once again, the spirit of America marched on. Although, in what direction? Possibly over the abyss, into the cliff, I don't know. But I'm sitting there watching this scene, and you really do see it out of the popular, cruddy art forms of any given age, the truth comes. Believe me, the marching band of the Tuscaloosa Psychiatric Institute tells more about our world than Henry Moore's sculpture or Jackson Pollock's painting, I'll tell you that, and certainly more than Edward Albee's plays. Here's what happened. I'm sitting there, Sam, watching. They said, now, ladies and gentlemen, the famous halftime marching band. Have you noticed that every band now that marches on television is world famous and considered to be the best? They come on, and they come out. They have this fantastic beat of about 300, about 300 beats a minute. They come whipping out, and I can see right away Jerome Robbins has had a hand in this band. It is not marching like a marching band anymore. You have a feeling that there's a bunch of guys in a musical down there. You know, how guys are in musicals. The funny thing is, this aggregation comes marching out, and they are swinging. Boy, it's like a gigantic chorus line out of a fairly bad musical, but faster. You know, they believe that if you do it fast and loud, you won't see it. So they come out there and they're doing the kicks, and with that, all of a sudden, they start to make their first formation. I'm watching to see. You know, usually they make a football, or they make a train that shoots real smoke, or they make a merry-go-round, you know, little things like that. Or all of a sudden this band starts to make its formation. I can't believe what I'm seeing. This band suddenly makes out there right in the middle of the field with 80 million people looking on and 17 billion TV viewers. The TV camera's going, the tape machine's going, it's probably recorded for all time. This band marches out and forms a gigantic hypodermic needle. For any smackheads listening, a spike. This band forms a gigantic spike, and in the meantime, they are playing away, and they've formed this fantastic spike out there. And I can see all over the country, guys are in there, they're knocked out of their skull, and all of a sudden, guys say, what are they up?
for the first time in probably ever, 19 million drug addicts suddenly became fascinated by football. You know what? And now, ladies and gentlemen, the famous marching band organization is forming a symphonic... tell you, there was a hush that hung over the audience. 80,000 people all of a sudden were quiet. They looking down there. I can think of some great things now. Now that we've opened up this art form, the marching band, I can think of some fantastic symbols. As a matter of fact, when I was in the band, we suggested them to Mr. Dirks. I'll never forget one day. Bring it on there, Tony. Watch it there. I'll never forget one day. We're down there, and we're knocking off El Capitan. And the whole crowd in the trombone, the tuba, and the clarinet sections decided to ad-lib a formation. And says, all right, you move that way, Charlie. I'll go over here. And next thing you know, you should have seen what was marching right down the middle of the football field in practice. Luckily, there were no girls around. This was before the days of the pom-pom players. We did it. We were very much ahead of our time. Boy, did we get busted. Dirks blew a cork and a... this band, did you see it? This band forms a gigantic hypodermic needle, and then a bunch of them got inside of it, you know, where the barrel is, and they start rushing out through the tube. They're making like they're the serum or whatever. That's all I can say, you see. They're rushing out, and it's sort of this little bunch of stuff gets out on the field there, and it's the stuff that's come out through the needle, see, and it gets out, and all of a sudden it forms, ow, all over the field. Oh, I don't know whether we're worshiping at the shrine of sadism or what, you know. And the announcer says, ladies and gentlemen, this fantastic marching organization is just now completing its beautiful salute to Ben Casey. Ow! And now they're going to form the salute to Elliot Ness. And a big skull is going down and through the sphere. And then a gigantic blackjack belts it. It cracks beautifully down the marching band. And they are now playing the theme music to the Elliot Ness Show. Can't you see him doing a salute to East Side, West Side? They show this guy from the back of his head, the band forms, and you know, it's a big thing. And you see these two big jug ears, and the band is playing away. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the marching band is now doing its famous interpretation and salute to East Side, West Side. Now you can see down there, there is a gigantic head. You see those big ears. The head is opening up. And look, big, beautiful bats are flying out. There's a bat. There goes a butterfly. Yes, it's symbolizing the sociological problems of our day. The band is now doing a counter march. And there, the score is 21-3 going into the second half. This orchestra is... I've seen. I can think of a lot of them. Now that it's television, can't you see a giant salute? Here we go again. I can see it coming up. Ladies and gentlemen, here we go now. The Northern Indiana Ball State Teachers College Marching Band Organization and Clam Chowder Society is now going into its fantastic 758 beat per minute march. Look at that swing. And now, ladies and gentlemen, they're going to do something which they did last year at the national convention that won them first place in the marching band division. The salute to David Susskind. There they are. It's the David Susskind theme now. You hear that big, ponderous Beethoven music they're playing out there. They're not only a marching band. They're a magnificent playing organization, ladies and gentlemen. As this beautiful pickleball game is now in the second half, the band is now forming the salute to... There it is. It's a gigantic open mouth. It is waving. You notice the tongue going there. And you notice those friendly sheepdog eyes that are forming. It is a salute to one of the great Americans of our time, David Susskind, the former... It's right at this point now, they're forming their gigantic letter. Don't you feel any of you ex-marching band guys, don't you feel it down there? The whistle goes. All right.
boy. Yeah, every time you look at a football, it's a giant salute to TV. And, of course, that really opens up a gigantic. Can you imagine the... Now, of course, you're saluting with that hypodermic needle. I'm really worried because, you know, I understand in the works, if those of you who are really interested in television, I'm sure that there are some of you louts out there that are, do you know that there really is a television show that is being prepared? They filmed several. One of my friends was in the pilot. They filmed several things, and it has to do with crime and the orthodontist. Yes. You know, where this guy comes in, wants his teeth straightened, and he wants to change his identity, and he wants to look like somebody else. And the orthodontist recognizes tough Louis Lepke, wants his teeth straightened so that he can get away from the fuzz, and he goes out to the back. Oh, it's a tremendous thing. Yeah, truly. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the salute to the orthodontistry industry is now being done down there by the Notre Dame marching band. It's a beautiful sight to see. They're waving their pom-poms, and now notice they're forming a gigantic set of dentures down there. It's a beautiful thing. And look, there goes the trombones are forming the braces. It's lovely, ladies and gentlemen. And now the pom-pom twirlers are too bad you don't have color, folks, because they're doing it in color. And you know what happens sometimes at the dentist. It's very exciting. Yeah, you know, if I had come to you and said a marching band is going to form a gigantic hypodermic needle, you would have called me out of my skull. Well, I saw it. this is WOR AM and FM New York. Get on the subject of sadism, and you just can't miss. If you feel that you are not participating enough in the life that we have, why don't you do it yourself right now, friends? Think of some things that you would like to see a marching band form some Saturday. Sure, that's a good one, huh? Hey, now try again now. You're just beginning now. Try again. Let's go even better than that now. Come on, use your old skull. Come on, stop letting people amuse you. Amuse yourself. Now, you think of something there. Now, just look up there in the darkness there. Take a pull of the beer there. There it goes. Oh, you'll never see that. Come on. We may be advanced, and we're marching forward. I think a little more of that. Marching forward music. Once again, we salute Western civilization as it marches forward, ever upward, ever onward. Yes, ever upward and ever onward, towards the top of that enormous pyramid, to the end of the cosmos and to the end of all time. Western civilization, ladies and gentlemen, is marching forward, carrying aloft the banners of life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and whoopee-ism to the final extreme. And we're here reporting it to you for all of its worth. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you are here. Yes, not home, sitting around. You're right here where it's all happening. Come on, let's go. Pick it up again. Oh, let's go. Yes, indeed. Yeah. It's not easy, you know, being people. It is. It really isn't, because, you know, so many things constantly pop up. And I think that we're in for, I believe we're in for a year of absolutely unmitigated, I think we're in for a wild year, friends. It's got to be a good one, because it's gotten already off to a start that you just can't. I don't think 63 will ever come up to this. As a matter of fact, I'm reading here in the paper the other day, the New York Times, and there's a big headline. It says, NAM pledges aid to Johnson, follows up with a tax on government interference. So that's what I say. And NAM pleads aid to Johnson, follows up with a tax on government interference. If the government would only stop fooling around, but we're going to support Johnson. And then to make it even funnier there, hold in abeyance there, Tony. I need patriotic music for this. It's in the back there. You just hold it. I'll give you the cue. Now, here I think is one of the great statements. I'm putting this in my trivia file. It was made by one of the big heads of a big company there in the New York Times piece. There's very fine. It was in the Sunday one, too, you know, and that makes it very official.
And they all criticized, all the NMA guys criticized what they saw as increased government interference. And they believe the taxes are too high, money isn't coming in good enough. And then the head man went on to say this, and I think this is a beautiful statement. This is going to go right down there with the marching band making the enormous hypodermic needle. This head of the NAM, or one of the big guys, said, and we quote, here we go. All right, bring me some patriotic music in behind me there. I'm up here giving a speech. I'm up on the dais. Ladies and gentlemen, I believe that prophets should rank right alongside such hallowed concepts as home, the mother, and the American flag. I pledge allegiance to the country from which it stands. I pledge allegiance to prophets, home, mother, and the American flag. Da, 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 da. All together, gang, now let's come on, ride it good. Sing it out! What a beat! Come on, gang, now come on! Very exciting. Yes, that's going to go in my trivia file. Rank alongside such hallowed concepts as home, mother, and the American flag, prophets. Well, I... By the way, the word prophet is open to definition. Nobody ever mentions that. Oh, boy. Some guys define 798% as prophet. Anything less than that is a lost leader. I wonder if Mr. Leader's up. Hi, leader. How are you? He's still around, huh? Oh, you speaking of insanity, I'll tell you, the world is getting... one of my favorite humor newspapers recently, in fact, this past week, reported another one of the advancing things in our time, and it shows a lady sitting there, and she's looking very serious. And looking over her shoulder is a dog. And the title says, A Savings Account to Provide Old Age Security for Dogs is now featured at the Bryn Mawr Trust Company. I think a little whoopee music for that. Oh, boy. Provides a little old age security for Fido. You know, for old Fang there when he's retired. He can sit back and clip his coupons like his old man. You know, when it gets hard to go out there and dig for them bones. It gets hard there, you know. And just gets a little tough knocking over garbage cans for yourself, you know. You wind up and you can just sit back and the old Bankers Trust Company of Bryn Mawr will send that dough out week after week. Old age security. I presume those are all good, solid, conservative dogs. I'm sure that makes sense to a lot of people. I know some kids at the age of 12 have got their life all mapped out already. They've made their down payment on their headstone. They know where they're going to lie throughout all eternity. Why not Fido? I'll bet before the year is out, there will be... I bet before the year is out, there will be a church formed that will cater to dogs. I'll just bet. Now, that sounds like I'm making a prediction. Now, let's make a few predictions for 1964. I'll bet there will be. And I'm sure already a lot of guys think that they have a Republican dog living with them. Other guys think they've got a Democratic dog. Sure. In fact, I know some people who absolutely steadfastly refuse to refer to a dog as a male. Or a female. Oh, yeah. It's a boy or a girl. You know, of course, when he gets a little old, you have to call him a man. I mean, you know, after all, 14-year-old dachshund is not a boy. I mean, you're looking at me staggering around with his crutches. You got to call him a man or she's an old lady, you know, actually. Anthropomorphism is on the rise. I wonder what happens, though, if, since you're providing old age security for the month now, by taking out a bank account. Boy, talk about a society based on plenty. Wow. Believe me, I'm sure that if it's dogs now, what'll it be next? Turtles? Guy's got a set of angelfish that he's in love with. Next thing you know, I don't know whether or not they... Well, seriously, it's a fascinating problem. But then of course, there are a lot of fascinating problems. It's in a sense, very much like the problem of the myth that we all have. Of course, this is an interesting side of our nature. We think that we can pay, somehow we can buy peace of mind. We can buy security. There's a commercial, boy, that really says this. Some insurance company commercial shows this guy smoking a pipe, and it says, wouldn't you like to have real peace of mind? You can get it, you know. It's not hard to get, and it shows the sleeves swirling behind him and the kids playing on the swings and all that stuff. Tells him where to go to get it, you know. Call up your friendly you-know-what man. He'll come down and fix it all up. And I wonder whether or not people who believe that because they've got a lot of insurance, it's going to make them feel better when lightning hits them. Or even if it will make it seem as though it's set, you know, it's all set. You pay the life insurance, it's all set now. Nothing bad is going to happen to me. Nothing bad at all. It's an intriguing problem. And I guess when a guy pays all this, you know, he's putting all the dough out and he's shoveling it out, he feels as though he is doing that, really. He's really, most guys are not paying for the kids, believe me. They may make that motion. There's a feeling that if you pay all the right stuff, nothing will happen to you. If you pay your Blue Cross, keep everything all up to date and get your teeth fixed and everything, nothing will happen. You know, you're doing the, it's like guys with cars, you know. If you feel that if you go down and you get your transmission changed with the grease and the winter time, and you get your antifreeze and you pay your insurance, you won't get that motor in your lap. You know, when some guy cloppers you with a Hupmobile, it's security. And they use the term security, which is an interesting term to be applied to half of the population who doesn't know what their name is and secretly feel that they're halfway down the road to hell anyway. Because a lot of guys have replaced insurance. I know friends of mine, really, who have replaced religion with insurance. They feel that they're doing pretty much the same thing that a guy who was a religious guy 50 years ago or 25 years ago, they're doing the same thing by paying. And the more they pay, they figure the more pious they are, the more secure they are in the knowledge of what's going to happen to them. And so finally you'll get to the point where there's a true fanatic about this thing, and he's like a true fanatic of any religion. If he's making $75 a week, $74.50 goes to the man. And he feels very secure because he can't go out, he can't walk around, he can't afford to go down and buy an ice cream cone while he's alive. You say, that's so fascinating. Nobody in the family while he's alive can do anything. We're all preparing for the hereafter, which is what all true religions do anyway. You know, I'm true religion. I'm talking about the true fanatic, which he figures that today is nothing. It's going to all happen tomorrow. And so many guys, I'm sure that many a guy feels that if he is rendered defunct properly, you know, in the right brackets, in those fine print things on the insurance policy he's got, he has led a good life. If he can somehow ram on to the double indemnity clause, which says if you are struck by a lightning rod while walking through Worcester, Massachusetts, going north, he will have, that proves that he not only hit the jackpot, but he was a good man all of his life, you know. It's a kind of, you know, it's like being admitted to the inner circle there. And all the way on down, oh, yes, of course. And there is a funny thing about that. You know, that today you can buy such things as job insurance. Now, oh, yes. Oh, I mean, if you get canned, thrown out. Now, I don't know whether, and I'm sure that it will happen. There will be, I'm positive, there will be an insurance company that will sell happiness insurance. That if you wake up after 17 years of being a fair and a decent swinger, and you wake up one day and nobody calls, and you're walking down the street on Fifth Avenue, and all the chicks that used to, you know, you'd look them in the eye, and they'd look you in the eye, and if one day they're looking right through you, it's like you're all of a sudden rendered invisible. And, you know, you go to the office and all those chicks in the steno pool that used to laugh at all your gags, if they just look at you and you see two of them whispering back by the water cooler and you hear the words, dirty, rotten old man, well, then I'm sure that at that moment, the guy will be able to call up his happiness insurance adjuster, and the insurance adjuster will come out, and he will spend 2 hours with the guy walking around, and the guy will be whistling at chicks, you know, and yelling, and nothing happens. He said, well, obviously, you're a clear-cut case. We'll send a chick over every week now to you. Can't buy money. You can't, you know. There's a lot of things to do with this. Oh, it's terrible. It's an awful thing. And what's everybody looking embarrassed about? What are you all embarrassed for? Huh? What's the matter? You've been paying premiums or what? You know, I don't know. It's true. It's a funny thing. I'll never forget the funny. I'll never forget one guy I saw in the Army one time. You want to hear about that? Well, the guy. This was one of the funniest scenes in the Army. Of course, it was a continuing problem in the Army, and it continually happened in the Army. And it was just a thing that I'm sure every guy who was a GI during any kind of war out there knows because he saw it happen. I'm sitting in the tent one day. See, they've got one of these pyramidal tents, they call them in the Army. It's a little pyramid scene. It's got six bunks all sort of looking at each other, see? And there's a little pot in the middle of the stove there, and the wind is howling through. And we have just come back from mail call. And about three guys are sitting in the tent with me. They're looking at the mail and tearing the stuff, and the wind is howling. I'm sitting there looking at the mail, and you know, it's the same old mail. After a while, you get the feeling like you've gotten the same letter forever, you see, when all of a sudden, one of the guys, Stosh, yeah, he could have been Kowalski, for all I know. Anyway, Stosh, all of a sudden, that has been censored. There's a muffled oath from over by the door, and somebody says, what's the matter, Stosh? He says, he jumps up, and he's rushing out, and somebody says, where are you going? He says, I'm going down to the Orly room. So what are you doing? He says, I'm going to change my insurance. Boy, after this letter. He's got the letter. He's got the $10,000 GI insurance, and I could just see some chick that got the water cut off right there, because there was a feeling of inevitability in the Army that whoever you made out the insurance to was going to get it. Oh, boy. I mean, I'll show that. Blah, 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 blah. I'll show her. And he rushes out and changes. I says, who did you make it to? He comes back. He says, me. I said, what do you mean, me? He says, I'm me. He says, when I'm blown up, they check. They're going to send the dough to me. They're going to bury it with me. I don't care. I'm through with them chicks. I actually saw that happen. So I don't know whether you could make it out to you, but he said he did. Now, I'm sure that many a guy would love to be able to make his insurance out to himself. And really, really, really hit the double jackpot there. And that has been an old continuing dream, you know, of mankind, to take it with you. Oh, yes. And a lot of guys get the impression that by buying insurance, they are, you know, that somehow they're making a payment on eternity. Of course, this leads to all sorts of sneaky little things that go yip in the dark and bump in the night. Of course, the fears that we have are manifold, as well as the myths. Have I ever discussed on this show the quicksand myth? I'm sure that everybody thinks quicksand is a separate element, like tin or iron. Yeah, quicksand. I'm sure that a lot of people think you can buy a bottle of quicksand, a jar of quicksand. The quicksand is a special kind of sand. I'm sure they do. Sure, I mean, especially you city types. I'm sure that you guys think there is a certain kind. What color do you think quicksand is, friends? White? What do you mean, white? Everybody thinks there is such a thing as quicksand. It is a specific type of sand, that there is a quicksand. And in fact, I'm sure that if I, these city types around here, that if I came rushing in, Tony, and I had a ball jar, you know, a pint jar, and I rushed up to, say, Jack Stewart, I said, Jack, I got a jar of quicksand. He said, get it away. Get it away from me. I said, here, Jack, quicksand. He figures if he puts his finger in it, he'll be sucked right in the jar. And down he goes. His feet are sticking out. That's the quicksand myth, which, as you know, pops up in every Class D mystery or terrible horror movie where they're going to throw the guy in the quicksand. Have you ever seen that one? How many guys you know have ever been caught in the quicksand? That's part of the myth. That there is such a thing as quicksand. Now I'm sure a lot of guys, what do you mean there's quicksand? I saw it in that movie. I remember one time Lou Ayres was caught in the quicksand. Quicksand. Well, of course, another one of the myths is the scorpion myth. The scorpion myth is the one that the bite of the scorpion is deadly. It kills you. Everyone believes that. They nod their head, say, yeah. No. I'm sorry. Scorpions, no. Only in very rare instances will a scorpion cause death. Extremely rare instances. Everyone believes that a scorpion is instant death. Yeah, that's right. The tarantula is even less deadly than the scorpion, but everyone believes it. That's the bogeyman myth that we have around us, that there are, that if you get bitten by a scorpion, forget it. They just cut your head off and that's it. I mean, and that your mouth will continue to move until sunset. Or if you bite something, you will not let go of it until the sun goes down or something. But the fact is that this is one of the great myths. And I remember, of course, being a city type, or at least sort of a semi-city type, the first time I dumped a scorpion out of a GI shoe, I practically went right through the top of my mosquito bar and bounced around the ceiling of the barracks. I'll tell you, we had a rule. Yeah, we did. It was out in the Everglades. There was a rule that it was just the way you lived. That every morning, you would take your shoe, and you just do your shoes, you know, you keep them under your bunk, and you just go clunk, 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 and about one out of every 10 times you did that, this little scurrying creature would come flying out and yell at you. Well, that was the scorpion, you see. Or else, you also had a rule, too, that whenever you were going to take your clothes down, you had them hanging at the end of your bunk there, you'd just shake them all out because out of the sleeves would come, guess what, about one time out of 10. Well, of course, I was a city type. I assumed that if you get belted by one of these things, just forget it. You know, the insurance goes home. Instantly, you are dead. And that's the way it is. And I figured, you know, there must be 1,000 guys get killed in the Everglades a day just by scorpion bites alone, not to mention coral snakes and alligators, not to mention just bad thoughts will kill you, too, because I thought that, too, at one time. But the scorpion myth is literally that. I don't know why I'm bringing this up, but we have millions of myths of that kind. There is a myth, of course, that there are... one of the great myths is the instantaneous death of being bitten by a poisonous snake. Very few snakes can kill you. Rattlers, for example. There aren't many rattlesnakes. It's all depending on the size of the snake. It depends on where he bites you. It depends on your physical condition. But it is not very easy to be killed by a rattlesnake. Are you aware of that? Everyone assumes that you get bitten by... Forget it. You bought it. No. That many guys get to the point where they can practically be bitten at will by rattles. You can build up an immunity to it, even. There aren't many really truly deadly snakes in the world. Among them is the cobra, or rather there's one kind of cobra. One of the most deadly of snakes, probably the deadly snake in our part of the world, is the little coral snake. And I can remember the first time I saw a guy, we were digging foxholes and slit trenches and stuff, and they live, you dig them up around stumps and the bottoms of palmettos and stuff like that, they get all twined, because apparently the root system of a stump or a palmetto is very cool. It's cool and it's moist, and they hide, they get all tangled up down there. And I remember the day the guy dug this thing up. And everybody's yelling and hollering, and there it is. It's a little coral snake. They're beautiful little snakes. You've seen them, haven't you, Walt? At least pictures, anyway. And then there's a snake that looks almost exactly like a coral snake, which is often mistaken for a coral snake. It's about the same size and everything, but the markings are slightly different. I think the rotation of the bands, the color of the bands, is in reverse to what they are on a coral snake. Beautiful, lovely little snake. And I think the coral snake is pretty rare, too. There aren't, as many coral snakes as are around as there are, say, garter snakes. Well, we had all kinds of myths, millions of myths that have to do with garter snakes. The myths that have to do with the black snakes. I remember one time when somebody brought around the schoolyard a gigantic black snake. Of course, all the quicksand fans are calling in angrily, saying they know all about quicksand once their cousin Elmer went... out in the backyard. Well, we had quicksand. Of course, the quicksand myth was very strong when I was a kid. There was a belief among, of course, this again, I must say, was a partly rural group of kids, that we believed certain areas had quicksand in them. And if you got near that it was curtains. That was it. It was just curtains. And we had also beliefs about several different kinds of spiders. There was another deadly belief that there was a certain kind of golf ball
that if you cut that golf ball open, it would blow your skull right off. Forget it. Or if you threw it into a fire, boom, no kid. And kids used to flirt with death like that, throwing golf balls into fires. I remember one time a crow flight blew me a block and a half. Oh, yeah, that was a crow flight number 3. That was the Johnny Bulla model. But then again, I remember there was another myth, too, that if you took an evaporated milk can and threw it into a fire, this evaporated milk can would just probably blow up the whole neighborhood because of the internal combustion that would be formed. It was a sealed can. The neighborhood goes up. It's Brunner throwing carnation cans in the fire. You know? Well, these are all... And the adult does not have any more... His mythical quality is just as great. We have a lot of myths, for example, about various... Many people will tell you that the myth follows us forever. There is always the myth of giant destruction. And many people will... we have this myth about an atom bomb, for example. It'll blow up the whole world. Just the whole world goes up. and yet we believe this. Just like in the... There always has been a belief that there are things which... just things in nature that will blow up. We want to believe this, I guess. I guess there's a deep, terribly dark clinging to things. Now, I remember there was a myth. Of course, it was sort of partly a myth, partly not a myth. We had a myth about the swamp. Anything that is watery or that it really is involved with nature will always have millions of myths around it. And one of the myths about the swamp was that there were parts of it that were bottomless. This is a common country myth, the bottomless quarry. I'll bet a lot of you even know where there's a bottomless quarry. Well, that even boggles logic. If there was a bottomless quarry, it would go right out the other end of the earth, you know. Somehow it would make contact with China. We always had a feeling that if you dug deep enough, you would make it down there, and you'd come out around Peking someplace. But the facts are, this is the bottomless pit myth, which has always been part of our world. There is the myth. These are things that we want to believe so strongly that guys will come back and say they saw it. There will always be that thing. Like, one of the great myths, of course, is the earthly paradise myth. This has pursued man for almost forever. And there were guys will tell you that there are lost continents, that there are lost civilizations where they have learned the perfect way to live. There is no want. There is no desire, none of the rotten things that man has anywhere else, he doesn't have in this place. To any of you who remember the movie Lost Horizons, this was a restatement of that myth. Everyone believes that there is a place like that somewhere, someplace. Why do you think that the song, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, Up on High, There's a land that I heard of once in a lullaby. Well, this song will continue forever because it taps a deep-seated desire to escape from reality, of course, which is obvious, and to escape into something which is perfect. This is the dream. This is one of the reasons why, if you notice, that any time somebody sets up a paradisical community, a paradise, one of the first rules what they think is a paradise, what they set up to create, one of the first rules is to seal it off from the rest of the world. We always define, Shangri-La was sealed off from the rest of the world. The worst thing that could happen would be to contact the outside world and would all go to pot immediately if that happened. This is one of the reasons why Russia maintains an Iron Curtain, because you have to do that. It's like kids living in a basement who are playing house. If you could somehow shut out the rest of the world, you can believe a dream. You can continue to build on it, and even though the dream has no basis in reality, as long as you don't somehow see reality, it's going to be fine. We have a little of that here in this country, too, you know. We believe we have an earthly paradise here. And so since we do, we have to cut ourselves off from large parts of the world for two reasons. One, to keep from getting contaminated by the outside world, and two, to keep the world from contaminating us. And so this Shangri-La concept is a pursuing thing all the time. But the myth, you know, it relates to the subconscious urges that we all have to return to some kind of prenatal state somehow where the wind didn't blow.
where you didn't feel cold and where there was no want, no hunger, none of these things. And so we feel constantly that we can create it, that somebody is really lousing up if we don't have it. Somebody is really lousing up. And yet, the intriguing thing, if you remember the picture, Lost Horizon, that one of the most significant things was that the world was exactly the world that Ronald Coleman had left. It had a definite caste system. It was also a dictatorship, which is one of the most primary requisites for the Shangri-La concept to work. Somehow people want this being, this earthly being who is totally without any human vice, completely without, and he will run it totally and completely and thoroughly for us with the most unselfish of and completely I suppose you might say, I suppose the word is, without any kind of basic juices flowing through him. And so if you have a paradise like this, you have to continue to tell yourself that's true. So nobody in Russia would ever concede, I'm sure, that Mr. Khrushchev has any of the little things that go on within themselves. You know, little pettinesses, little angers. And on the other hand, we have to do it too. And so in Shangri-La, you had the belief that the great Lama was perfect. Absolutely perfect. There could not be even the slightest suggestion of an evil thought in his mind. And, of course, in the end, when great political philosophies are based on this enormous misinterpretation of human nature, look out. Boy, look out. Because in the end, when little evils begin to pop up in paradise, you have to blame it on the outside world. It has to be blamed on the outside world. And so that old quicksand is waiting to pull you in. Those scorpions are waiting to bite. The bottomless quarry in Indiana goes down and down and down through green deeps of waters. And those blind fish are nuzzling along the edges of those little dark pools in the great mammoth cave in Kentucky. And there you sit.
Shepherd from January 1964. To wrap up this edition of the Dustbin of History, I'm your host, Max Schmid. Anne Marie Hendrickson will be back eventually.